The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
What's going on, everybody? This is Pat the Talking Bearskin Rug, and do we have a treat for you. In this month's microsode, we don't just have one topic or one interview to give to you. We've actually got two. So sit back and relax and settle in for the first of our two interviews with the one and only Brian Anderson. And then stay tuned. We have an extra special interview coming up right after that.
Welcome to Flame On. I am Brian the Bear. I am here with the one and only Brian Anderson.
Hi, I'm also Brian, a bear.
Oh, that's true. Now, have you been a bear? Before I get into your credentials, I do have to ask this. Have you been a bear for a while, or is this a more recent development?
I'm recently fat, so I guess I'm kind of a bear, recent bear.
Well, I was going for the bearded thing, because I thought I had seen a picture, you know, however long ago I first, you know, heard of you, and I think friended you on Facebook or whatever, and I don't remember seeing a beard, but then, you know, we are doing this over Skype. We did do a little video preview for a second, and you are very nicely bearded now, so that's very
well. Cool. I've been bearded for a long time because I have no visible jawline, so I have to have a beard to appear like I have something of a chin.
Oh, well, yeah, I understand.
But not to offend anybody who's a bear and therefore overweight, because not all bears are overweight, so not to offend any of my fellow bears.
The community is so oversensitive these days that we don't want to.
That's true.
We don't want to do anything.
Anything.
Okay, so for those of you who do not know Brian, you might know him from any number of different places. The first and the thing I had found out about you was being one of the very first, I think, gay geeky podcasters. If I have my facts straight, when was X Gays put out? How long ago? Like.
I don't know. Like, well, I think you've been longer than us. We've been doing it. We did it for about 3 years, 4 years.
But do you remember when you started?
It was before my fellow ex-gays co-host Jason Brock joined X Factor, and that was 2 years ago. So 3 years ago, I guess.
Oh, all right. Well, so that was around the time we started then. Okay. I didn't realize that we were about the same time. I thought that you were earlier. But so you may know him from ex-gays. You may know him from his work in comics. If you have not read So Super Duper, a fabulous anthology of gay, geeky superhero fun, you're missing out.
Right.
It's great.
You're sorely missing out.
Seriously, no. It's super fun. We'll talk about that. We also, and I read this actually today, Sex and the Superhero.
Yes.
Which is an ongoing, right?
Actually, that was just a one-shot I've done. What I want to do is ongoing, but I just put it as a one-shot for now. Then kind of an introductory issue to test the waters to see what the response was, and then I would love to do more stories.
Well, I loved it. I mean, we'll get into all those eventually. No, I really did enjoy that. Now, what are the other two?
DJ's in the mail.
Oh. what were your the other two you had mentioned?
I also have a Friend of Dorothy, which is my fairly more recent work, and then Rainbow and Diva, which I also collected into a graphic novel collection.
Oh, okay. Now, I think I actually. The little one's getting cranky.
She's joining the conversation, so she'll be chiming in for here now and then.
So adorable. So let's start with So Super Duper because I'm sorry. And one more thing, of course, you may know him from The Advocate,
as
the latest and greatest gay geeky correspondent. And actually, you know, I know they have from time to time had gay, or of course, gay geeky content, like just here and there.
Right.
But you're like a regular thing now, right?
Yeah, well, we had someone before covering all things geek for The Advocate, and there's actually, if you go to theadvocate.com, you know, they have different breakdowns for each type of, I guess, article they're posting, and they actually have their own banner for geek, So that's kind of my beat, I guess I'd say. So I cover all things geek, and I've just done it for the last, it's been 2 weeks, so I'm fairly new.
Yeah, but it's so both awesome to see, and I don't know, it's weird, because I've been reading The Advocate both online and in print since I was in college in the 90s, and you know, it has always been to me the like gay New York Times, you know, it's the right. One place.
That's what it wants to be. It's kind of a more, I won't say hard hitting, but you know, a little more newsy focused type of.
I mean, in contrast to like Out or X and Y, right. Certainly, or I don't even know, yeah. Instinct. I mean, you know, those are a little more flashy, fashion, right. Or you know, eye candy oriented. But so yeah, that's your background now. Let's go back to the X gays, because you know, being another fellow gay podcast, you know, we're obviously curious about our competition. No, our brethren, because it is still a very relatively small field, although growing, thankfully.
Right.
So the X gays started a few years ago. It was you and Jason
Brock.
Okay. And then
he left the show after he went on the X Factor, and he made a stab at becoming a famous singing sensation, and he's still in the trenches making that happen.
Uh-huh.
So I had a bunch of co-hosts took over, like, you know, rotating co-hosts for a year. And I recently stopped doing it after I had my baby. She's 5 months old. So we haven't done it for probably about 8 months or so.
Okay. And as a parent, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I'm an uncle to many, or at least a handful of children these days. And so I totally understand how that works.
And you're probably something of a daddy to many a twink, I'm guessing, right?
I do not profess to be quite the twink slayer that others do, but I will not lie. I have been called daddy at least once on one occasion. So
I've been called daddy in both variations of the term, so
So Sex Gaze was basically comic book focused gay geeky podcast, right?
Right, with tons of raunchy, horrible, sexual, and offensive humor.
Well, there's nothing wrong with any of that. It does mean you have to get the explicit tag on iTunes. But other than that, it's actually kind of a badge of honor. So, yeah. And as part of that, you know, you got to, I'm sure, do a lot of cool stuff. And you guys did interviews and reviews. And did you kind of make the rounds?
Yeah, and we covered we covered AVX when that was released at 12 midnight. That was like, what, 2 years ago as well?
Mm-hmm.
We went to the comic book store and covered that and interviewed people who were coming in. So that was really fun. And we've just had, just a lot of different co-hosts and people talking about their geeky interests. We try to cover everything from gaming to movies to collectibles. You know, try to broaden it, even though it's called X-Gaze, which is X-Men centric. We try to make it everything geeky related,
right? Yeah, you never know with your audience like what people will want to listen to. We have added drag to our lineup, and some people love it, some people hate it. They're like, stop doing drag. I know, and hopefully that one listener that I know basically told, he's a friend of mine, he told me this in person, he's like, just stop doing the drag thing or do whatever. I'm like, but that's, you know, we're interested in that, and we're getting to meet drag queens and talk about their lives.
Exactly. And it's more fabulous than geeky drag queens.
I know, right? Well, anyway, so X-Gaze kind of wrapped, and you're it's on hiatus, let's say, until you get more time, right. And you want to dig back into that. Now, the writing and the comics that you've been doing, was that something you started prior to that? Have you been doing that for longer?
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah, I've been doing comic books since I think 2006, 2007. So quite a while. I love it. It's something that I've always wanted to do, and all the other geeky things kind of, believe it or not, came after the comic book. So I kind of, I guess, somewhat established a name for myself as a geeky comic book independent creator who's also a massive bitch. And I guess people gleaned onto that. So I've kind of, you know, my name gone around a little bit, and here I am writing for The Advocate. I've written for Newsarama and Instinct Magazine and, podcast, and now I'm talking to you, fine gentlemen.
Well, so let me ask you about your inspirations, or I guess, like, because you wanted to get into comics, aside from the big two, and we can talk about that as well, were there any other, like, people or comic book or cartoonists that you saw as inspiration and kind of made you want to start doing that?
Yeah, I would say, well, I guess I read one time an interview that one comic book creator, and I can't remember who it was, he said that you know, the problem with comic book fans is that almost everybody who reads comic books wants to also be a creator. So you're kind of dealing with this whole massive audience who's sort of gunning for your job, I guess I'd say, and therefore are hypercritical of what you're doing. So that was me as well. I mean, since I picked up my first comic book, the very first thing I wanted to do was create one myself. It took me a long time to actually sit down and do it because I didn't know how to go about doing it. But once I did, I'm like, oh, this is really fun. And it's a great world to be in. And it's a great, you know, underground world. And I was like, this is totally fits me. I love doing it.
Now, I know the So Super Duper was Kickstarter yes. published, right? Okay.
And yeah. had you been. Well, I published the individual books myself, and then I did a trade collection, which Kickstarter paid for. Okay. And that collected all the 12 issues. Plus, I redid a lot of the coloring and made the pencils a little tighter and kind of corrected things that were wrong here and there. So it's kind of like a reworking, I guess I would say, like a remastering of the original.
Okay. Well, the colors, I've been reading it on my Samsung tablet, and the colors are gorgeous. Like, it's very, very, very vibrant.
Yes, which, that's what people tell me. I don't know if that's a compliment or an insult, but no, people always tell me it's very bright.
It's for superhero, and it's very superhero based. It's basically right. the story of Psyche, right?
Yes,
and he right. is kind of it's a coming of age story, sort of, for this superhero. Yes. As he joins this team, and I can't remember the name of the team. I'm sorry,
Amazonauts.
That's right. That's right. So he joins the team and has sort of a learning curve, if you will, to not only figure out his powers, his power set, if you will, and how he fits in with the team dynamic, but also his sexuality. And it's very humorous. I would say it's far more humorous than serious.
Yes, and there's serious elements, but I guess when I went into it, I wanted to make kind of a harken back to the old comic books where they used to be kind of more fun and mm-hmm. bright and kind of I don't want to say goofy, because it's not a goofy comic book, but, you know, just something that, I remember comic books used to be fun and kind of playful, and it had serious and dramatic elements, but it was also just a kind of a happy experience. And now I feel like comic books are so dark and broody, and not that there's anything wrong with that, because I still love them, of course, but I wanted to do something that was more harkening back to, you know, when I first started reading comic books.
Now, so yeah, very much like the Morrison versus Frank Miller, or actually Morrison right. versus Alan Moore kind of thing.
I would say it's kind of Archie-esque. So I would say it's Archie-esque, but with a little more
adult
realism, dramaticness to it, I guess I'd say, yes. Yeah. Drama, if you will.
It's melodramatic, and Psyche is a very colorful, both, you know, actually and also figuratively, character. Lots of sass, lots of sort of, you almost would say stereotypical sort of, like, personality quirks.
Which is hilarious to me, because when I started creating the comic book, Psyche is really based off myself, and I've told the story a million times, but when I've created him, I kind of built him around how I act and how I respond to things, and perhaps maybe he's maybe amplified to the 11th power, but he's still, you know, really kind of me. So it's funny to me, I was totally caught off guard when the negative criticism I get from the book are two things. One, the art sucks, which granted, I will give you that. And two, the character is too fruity and stereotypical. They just can't stand him. And that really caught me off guard, because not that every gay person is fruity and flamboyant, but that was my reality. So I was just showing my reality. But people just saw him and could not get past the fact that he was so fruitily feminine. And I kept telling people, well, he's not the only gay character in the comic book. You know, there's other types, I exactly. guess I'd say, of gays.
No, I was going to say, and again, I apologize. My I've had a long weekend. And his love interest at first, the brother of the sister.
Yes, Comet.
Comet. Much, I think, more what people would say is a... I mean, I hate to put these into these kind of, you know, archetypes, but less flamboyant, right. certainly, you know, a straight acting, I guess, is a lot of yes. people's favorite term for this.
I would almost say he's more the acceptable gay, I would say, in media. So I feel like the only acceptable gay in media are the ones that are so watered down that they could be interchangeable with any other character. which I feel is actually kind of sad.
Or they've been neutered so much that even if they're sassy like Jack from Will and Grace, they don't have any overt sexual nature.
Oh, no. Yeah. Heaven forbid if that were the case. That exactly. Would be like,
so,
that would ruin the world.
Now, for the art, you drew this, right?
I drew half the book. I drew 8 issues. Okay. And then I realized that I'm more of a dabbler in the artistic world, not so much of a amazing cartoonist like I wish I would be.
Uh-huh.
And so I realized I needed some help. So I enlisted my trusty co-creator, Selena Hernandez, and she took over the rest of the book from issue 8 until issue 12.
Okay.
So I did half and she did the rest.
So you might think you're reading it, you're like, wow, his art's gotten a lot more refined. But no, that's interesting because as a very, very amateur dabbler myself, it's interesting to see where a creator sort of reaches the limits of their abilities and they decide, you know what, I'm going to bring in the big guns and try to do that. But, you know, at the same time, you know, your cartooning, it's in a lot of indie styles is, you know, more on the cartoony side. And I was we were having this big discussion about this at Heroes Con and some of the creators were talking about this and how the more photorealistic, the more, you know, hyper realistic, the more people don't have to apply themselves as much. They can just sort of look at the page and go,
that's
okay.
That's very true, yeah.
But
that's
yet, as a cartoonist, a lot of cartoonists that are more independent, the Hernandez brothers are a great example, of course, Love and Rockets. Their art style, as much as they're both very distinct and very, you know, kind of special, a lot of it's fairly basic lines. They're not super
it's very
high
cartoony.
Realistic.
You're right. Yeah, it's very simple, cartoonish. It's kind of like Trina Robbins. I don't know if you know her artwork, but it's similar to hers. It was also very simple lines, cartoony, but still had its own charm and wonderment to it.
Yeah, and so that also then draws in the readers and makes them have to sort of work a little harder with their imagination.
Right.
Which is its own thing.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when I was in, I had my comic book syndicated on Newsarama, on the blog on Newsarama for 2 years when I did reviews and wrote articles for them. And oh my gosh, the amount of hatred and anger I got from people solely based on my art style was insane. Like, it was insane. I was so, again, unprepared for how much people would hate on my ability of drawing, because I thought it was cute and fun, and you know, there's a lot of independent comic books that are cute and fun and simplistic drawing, but oh no, forget it. Because I was on Newsarama, people hated me.
And it's funny, again, you mentioned it, because we talked about this at the con too, and how internet trolls are a huge problem, and there are people who are just vicious in the internet when they would never do this in real life. They wouldn't have the courage to confront somebody like that directly.
Isn't that bizarre? Like, what do you think creates that mentality? I always wonder, like, what puts someone in a position that they want to be so hateful to somebody hiding behind a computer? I don't get it.
The only thing I've thought of with this is, and it's the obvious thing, is some of these people, I think, have had such either bad experiences growing up where they were bullied or something where they feel powerless. Like, they look at their lives and they feel like they have no agency at all. And they find this then online, this chance to just take apart people and tear down people for their own, so they feel better. I mean, we all know when we're being catty at our worst, the things that make us feel the best are taking other people down, reading them. You know, the library's open.
Oh, girl, trust me, I could be a catty bitch sometimes.
Right,
so I have no problem reading people, but I also feel like I wouldn't do it somewhere where I was just actively hating on somebody every single day.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
I mean?
And then that's the unfortunate thing is I think they get so stuck in it. But I think I did remember seeing your stuff on Newsarama. I've been back in comics for a few years, but I don't always keep up with some of those sites. But now that you mention that, now I do remember seeing. So that's a really good platform for someone trying to sort of get their name out there as a cartoonist.
It was awesome.
Right?
What actually gave me the Creator Pro, I guess, badge that I have now at Comic-Con was the fact that I was on Newsarama, so now I get my free pro badge whenever I go to any comic book convention, which is kind of nice.
Oh, very cool. I didn't know that. That's what more can you ask for? You just show up.
Right, exactly.
Do your thing, sell some books.
I was prepared to do out, you know, drill out hand jobs and DJs for free badge, but, you know, they just gave it to me, so I'm fine with that.
Now your follow on stuff.
She didn't like that joke.
Oh, well, you know, daddy giving a hand job, maybe not the best imagery for a young daughter. So no, the sex and the superhero, that's a more recent thing of yours, correct?
That's again, it's probably about 4 years old.
Oh, is it? God? See, this is what happens when I do my research fairly late. No, and this is the other thing. I mean, your stuff is available through your website, of course, right?
Correct.
Which is what?
Yeah. It's sosuperduper.com.
Excellent. So make sure you guys, and we'll put that in the notes, of course, so people can find it. But
great.
Other than directly through you, how have you distributed your stuff? Like,
It's been on sale at prismcomics.org, where you can go to the online store and you can actually buy physical copies. And I've had it distributed through multiple stores throughout the U.S. So it's been in New York. It's been here all over San Francisco. It's been in Chicago, a couple stores. Texas it's been in.
Wow.
And then, you know, when I go to comic book conventions, it's on sale there. And then I just have it for sale on my website, where you can just PayPal me for a digital copy, and then I'll send you the PDF link.
Excellent. So, yeah, so I will admit, when I was sort of putting together Flame On and trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I did not find your stuff readily. And I did know of Prism, but I guess, you know, obviously in your kind of, and Prism actually even 3 years ago wasn't what it is now. I mean, now it's a major, yeah. Zan has done such great work building up this publishing company, and it's in a far better
Prism,
place.
Prism is separate from Northwest Press.
So oh,
Northwest
I'm an idiot.
Press is Zan's publishing company. Prism is the organization, I guess I'd say, that represents all kinds of publishers, including myself. So I'm self-published. There's a lot of other self-published artists and creators. So they cover all of us. They're like all-inclusive.
But what's the relationship between Prism and Northwest? Is there a relationship, or are they completely separate?
Well, now they're separate. But Zan originally started PrismComics.org as a means of getting gay geeks kind of a connection with other gay creators. Then he went off and started his Northwest Press imprint, and then he kind of left Prism Comics, and now it's run by other people as a nonprofit. And again, they have like comic book conventions and events, and then they have an online store, and that's where you could buy books from any gay publisher.
Okay, because I knew there was some connection, and I thought Zan was, and like you said, he is the connection. But right. And this is, of course, not to be confused with like Class Comics, which is a whole other thing.
No, but Prism also sells Class Comics, so again, they're kind of like a Diamond Comics, sort of, you want to put it that way, where they will carry all types of gay comic books that you can purchase through them, and then say Class Comics will get a percentage of whatever book you buy from Prism, and they get the other percentage.
Gotcha. So yeah, exactly, like a Diamond. That's good for our listeners, actually, because we've never talked about these distributions. We had Zan on I think last year or 2 years ago. We've talked to a few other...
Naughty him for not explaining that, Zan. Hello.
Actually, you know, he may have explained more than I... It's been that long, so...
Or were you just high at the time, or both?
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I what's sad is I do most of these things with Flame On, but I was actually not there for the interview. So I actually heard the interview secondhand like any listener. So anyway, long story short, you are distributed through Prism. And so people can go check you out there. You are available directly digital, like you said, which I am now going like all digital. I love having them on my I want to say iPad. Of course, everyone wants to say iPad, my tablet. So what is your most recent comic that you've done?
So my most recent book was Friend of Dorothy, issue 1 and 2. And I'm currently finishing issue 3, being worked on now. And Friend of Dorothy came out, I guess I'd say a year and a half ago. I've taken the last year off because of my gorgeous daughter, who doesn't like hand job jokes. She's kind of taking a lot of my time, so I've taken a bit of a break from creating comic books, but I have a number of stuff that I'm hopefully going to be launching sometime soon.
Oh, great. Well, definitely when you do, let us know and we'll share it.
Thank you.
What is Friends of Dorothy about?
So Friends of Dorothy... I really wanted to create a story about a teen gay character who just struggles with his sexuality, which I guess now that I'm a little bit more older and I'm kind of away from that world, I feel like it's kind of been done. But at the time, I felt like it'd be great to have a gay teen character who kind of struggles with who he is, but then he gets empowered by Galindo, the Good Witch of Oz, who's a male version of Glinda, he comes in and gives this character's name, Scott John, all these abilities of Oz. So he becomes the champion of Oz on Earth, and he has to go and defeat an evil munchkin who's trying to take over Earth. So he gets like the Tin Woodsman's axe and these ruby boots. They're kind of go-go boots instead of slippers. And he gets like these gloves, or the lion gloves. They give him power of 10 lions. So he kind of becomes like the superhero who goes on a journey. He goes and picks up his boyfriend, teenage boyfriend, and they go together to kind of defeat this munchkin character.
Oh, that sounds so much fun. I love that he takes these like totems from Oz and like
they
give
him
powers.
They're all harking back to Oz, and there's evil flying monkeys that possess people, so they become kind of like zombies with a monkey, winged monkey on their shoulder that control them. Uh-huh. So he has to fight them, and there's also these evil scarecrows that are kind of possessed dark versions of the scarecrow who try to kill you. So there's a bunch of Ozian ideas in it. It's really supposed to, I mean, at first it sounds like a tongue-in-cheek, kind of dumb, goofy story. But again, my whole point in telling my lighthearted stories is I try to make it more dramatic and realistic as much as possible. So I take an idea that sounds kind of dumb, but I try to make it something more serious and fun. I guess I'd say kind of like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, inherently a goofy idea. But when they did it very seriously, so it worked.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, it sounds like something that is both fun and can be serious or whatever. And, you know, we're talking about this again, Heroes. Like, it's as much as there has been that coming of age, coming out story, I think it needs to be told even more, because I still think there's so many kids who don't know that as a story, and they don't have that thing to relate to. You know what I mean? So I think it's great, actually, that you're empowering this character, both, you know, literally and figuratively with these powers, like, and that people could see themselves in that, even if it's, you know, fantastic, right?
Oh, well, thank you. You're BJ's in the mail.
I'd like to know how that works. Now, so one more thing.
You'll find out.
I've got to figure this out. Now, I know you have had issues with, and I'm not gonna call it censorship because it is, but with X-Gays on Facebook, you have had some amazing art and pictures and photographs and whatever of some great eye candy.
Right.
But you have, over the course I've known the X-Gays and you've had issues with Facebook censorship somehow. Could you talk?
Yeah, I think part of it was the trolls were coming after me. Uh-huh. And I'm not sure if it was people who didn't like gay imagery or if it was gay people that I offended, because again, you know, the gay community nowadays, not everybody, but for the most part, a lot of us are so hyper PC, easily offended at everything. Uh-huh. So I had a couple people who were gay who had problems with XYZ. And so I think they just started coming after me and reporting all my pictures. And so eventually I got banned at least 3 separate occasions for 24 to 48 hours. And so what happened was, luckily, I shouldn't probably go into this, but I have a friend of a friend who works at Facebook, and they looked into my account and found out who was doing it. And without saying so much, they said a couple people were anti-gay people, and then a couple people were fellow LGBT people who were just trolling my page. And they now put me in this secure group that's with, I guess they have an LGBT group that handles all LGBT type entertainment website pages on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
And so now I'm monitored by them. So I haven't been banned since, but I did recently get a picture removed that was found deemed inappropriate. So,
and what's funny
that
is
that was
when,
just yesterday.
Oh, I didn't realize that. When you have that happen, what I love that you do is that you put the original picture up on your blog. So you'll put a link to that so people can go and check it out. And sometimes it's kind of ridiculous because it's like, are you kidding me? I have Facebook groups now where I'm getting practically full nudity on Facebook.
Well, how it works, as I found out too, just so you know, is once you've been reported once or twice, you will go into this high-risk group. So then any picture someone wants to report you for, any picture, it could be a picture of, you know, Ariel, Little Mermaid, like that has nothing wrong with it. But if someone reports it, it automatically goes into this silent computer mode and you just get banned outright.
Wow.
So that's where I was for a while. I was in Facebook jail for a while because of that.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, you have, of all of our little gay groups that we have out there, I am impressed with the way you've been able to. You've got thousands of likes, I believe.
I have almost 40,000 likes on my page. Which is crazy.
That's amazing. Like, you know, look at some of these other ones, like even Geeks Out, which has been, you know, climbing up with all the work they've been doing, and they're still not there. I mean, it's impressive. It's very cool. And obviously, having platforms like Newsarama and The Advocate and all that, that helps. But I mean, you've worked hard, I think, to get to point. Yeah.
Yes, I have. Well, it's kind of a hobby of mine, and I feel like it's not that hard for me to find cool images, which I kind of do on my, you know, when I'm watching the TV and I'm bored, I'll just scroll through and try to find things.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I don't want to toot my own horn, but toot, but I feel like it's all about kind of taste factor. And I try to present images that I feel have something to say, you know, whether it's like a cute cartoon or some cool mashup or some incredibly sexy guy that's not being too sexy, that's just being sort of porn. And I try to always make like the captions somewhat humorous and attention grabbing.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess I would say hopefully the taste that I bring to the X-Gaze is to the taste of other people. And so all the likes I get are really just from word of mouth, from people sharing my images. I don't really advertise the page with Facebook. It's just from people sharing the images, and then people come and like the images and they join the fun, and we just keep growing.
Well, it's been very impressive, and I know we've shared numerous posts of yours on Flame On because
they're
great. I mean, it's what I feel like we should do as a community, is share these kind of things and really build up this community that we have.
Well, I guess I totally agree, but I feel like part of the problem is a lot of fellow LGBT geeky creator type people, I feel like a lot of them are really competitive with each other.
Oh, okay.
And I don't really necessarily feel that way, but I know certain groups in the gay community who I know quite well don't really care for me, I guess I'd say.
Huh.
And so I don't think there's a lot of necessary support on their end, but really? I just keep doing what I'm doing and ignore, you know, the haters.
Well,
haters are my motivators.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, it's one of those things where the more well known you are, the more good and bad is going to come with it. And at some point, you know, any attention is attention. So I do not know of any such people in our little community that has issues with you, obviously.
You're so sweet. Your BJ's in the mail.
Yeah, I'm getting quite a collection.
You got three coming your way.
That's exciting. you know, I don't want to keep you too long. I feel like we'll put your website up, which is sosuperduper.com.
Awesome.
You're on Twitter, right?
The X-Gaze, yes.
Okay, so we'll put that up as well. Facebook, of course, and you know we'll put a link to your page up on our Facebook. But we've already liked you, and we share so many posts. If you just go to Flame On's Facebook, you'll find him, or just search for X-Gaze, you'll find him.
And I will also post you on my X-Gaze page, and hopefully send some eyeballs your direction.
Woo! That'd be great, especially after this weekend. I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, and congrats, you guys. I hope you're talking about it after this, but congrats on your awesome panel and being written up in Bleeding Cool. That's amazing.
I was
like, how great is that?
I was driving home when I found all that out, but we'll talk about that off the air. But yeah, no, thank you, Brian, so much. And I hope in the near future, maybe we can even have you sit in for a full episode, and you can just like the, or when you decide you want to bring the X-Gaze out of retirement, we'll have like a fun little crossover or something.
That would be awesome. If we meet in person, I could give you your delivery of BJ's in person.
Oh, okay. Now we got to do this. Now, are you doing any cons coming up? Do you have anything on your schedule?
I'm actually going to be at San Diego Comic Con. Okay. I'm going to be on a panel on Friday, July 25th. I believe it's from 2 to 3, and it's called LGBT Comics for Youth.
Yes.
And I'm excited. Prism Comics invited me to be a part of it, and I'm really super stoked to be part of it.
Very cool. Well, we'll definitely, when that's coming closer, just let us know, and we'll broadcast the hell, because I mean, I'm so excited we got a gay panel at you know, Heroes Con in Charlotte. But
that's,
I mean,
amazing,
you know, San Diego, New York, Chicago, they've for several years now have had great panels, and I'm very envious, but I'm sure you're gonna do great. And that'll be a great panel for people to see. I mean, youth is such a big market, and they need to know these positive stories. So gay for
and
you.
That's what I tried. My books have always been geared towards, I guess, youthful, like teenage youthful. So I always say that it could be enjoyed by kids and adults and fat people and skinny people and ugly people and handsome people and, you know, aliens and mutants. And, you know, if you enjoy, hopefully, just a fun, good story, you can enjoy one of my comic books.
Absolutely. And there's sexy stuff too, which again, it's not graphic, but it's sexy enough that I think you're right. Like a later teen adult male or female. There's some lesbian stuff. Like it's fun. So, well, thank you again for joining us. And
thank you. Thanks, we'll
talk to you again soon.
Okay, take care.
All righty. So that was our interview with Brian Anderson of the X-Gays. And coming up for you now, a very special interview. In case you haven't checked it out on our YouTube channel, you know you can search for Flame On under channels and watch this interview as it happened live. But here we go for your listening enjoyment. The boys sit back and interview the one and only Jason Aaron.
Hey, I'm Eric with Flame On. I am here with Brian.
Hello.
Jeff.
How's it going?
Oral.
That's me.
And actually, Pat here too.
What's going on?
And we are here today. We're going to interview Jason Aaron, the greatest writer of, we have with Thor, Original Sin, and Seven Bastards.
How's it going?
Hey, Jason.
Hi.
So, Jason, okay, first I wanted to say that I read your Incredible Hulk when you did the Incredible Hulk run. And it was one of my favorite Hulk stories to date. I thought it was phenomenal. I mean, I love Planet Hulk and everything by Greg Pak, but that one, the way you split Banner and the Hulk, it was just a great story. Like, what drove you to write something like that to split them apart?
It started out as an idea for a Hulk miniseries where I wanted to do kind of Apocalypse Now with Banner as Kurtz and Hulk as the hero. Just because I like the idea of flipping the paradigm and making Banner the scary one, and being able to do a really sympathetic portrayal of the Hulk, instead of the typical setup of, you know, Banner as the poor nerdy scientist and Hulk as the monster who comes out of him. So I just wanted to do something different. And it started out as pretty dark, and I think it got kind of wackier and crazier as it went along to where it had, you know, monkeys throwing radioactive poop and all sorts of weird new characters popping up in that run. So I enjoyed writing Hulk. I had a lot of fun with it. I liked it, especially there was the one arc called Stay Angry, where it was got to work with a lot of different cool artists. There's a different guy drawing every issue. Got to do a lot of new characters. That was fun. Most hardcore Hulk fans were not huge fans of my Hulk run. It was really? a little too wacky, I think, for them.
That's such a strong payoff, though.
Well, thanks. It was fun. I mean, I look at it kind of like as the Ghost Rider stuff I did. To me, it's kind of the same sort of level of it's kind of dark at times, but most of it's sort of crazy and over the top.
Right.
So I think those are pretty similar.
That was great. Well, I'm
glad you liked it.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. With that, compliments with the art by Sebastian. It was just a great story. And I'm a sucker for great white sharks. And the Gamma Radiant Great White Sharks is awesome.
that's I think it's that issue 2 with that cover where he's punching the shark. It's one of my favorite, covers of a book I've been associated with.
Speaking of sharks, Jason, I love your Thor. Your Thor is like my...
This is a good segue. I like that you use the sharks to segue into Thor.
Because whenever I'm trying to sell Thor to people who haven't read it yet, I'm just like, it's like Jason Aaron decided to do Thor plus heavy metal, and it's like you have star sharks. So, like, I have a question. Where... in your mind, did you decide, and this is where I'm going to put these celestial sharks that, like, just roam the cosmos in?
Well, it came from, I think, when I was doing Wolverine the X-Men and rereading lots of old X-Men comics. Remember in some of those Claremont issues, there were those giant, like, whales that would fly through space? I think the Brood, like, used them as ships. So I always thought that idea was awesome, these giant space whales. So I was thinking along those lines, and I said, well, if they're space whales, they've got to be space sharks, right? And I'm sure I'll have to have the space sharks come back in Thor at some point.
Yay!
They were great. The Thor run has been brilliant. You brought it back to, which I love, it went back to being like the whole gods and Asgard. Because for a while, it got very sciencey, and then you just brought it right back to its roots, and you've been, like, the God Butcher was brilliant, and this run with the Galactus and everything has just been fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm still having a lot of fun on Thor. I was really happy with that first big arc. I love being able to work with Esad Ribic on it. I think he's done amazing stuff on Thor and has really kind of defined, I think, the look and tone of Thor for many years to come. But I'm still having just as much fun now as I was when we first started, and I'm as excited about the stuff that's coming up later this year as I was when we first started the God Butcher arc.
Awesome. Oh, yeah,
so I hope to stick around on Thor for... I hope to stick around for a really long run on Thor. I mean, I've had my schedule kind of has gotten crazy this year, you know, where I had to come off of Amazing X-Men, and I've been doing Original Sin, you know, which is a big event book that ships twice a month, so that's been crazy, and I've got some other stuff coming up later, so I've had to kind of juggle things around, but through all that, I've clung tightly to Thor. I've actually turned down some other jobs because I knew if I took that job, it would mean I would probably have to give up Thor, you know, in the near future. So I really desperately, like, they'll kind of have to just fire me off this book, basically. just pry it away from me and say, stop writing Thor. Because I really, you know, I want to have, like, some big Thor omnibuses by the time I'm done. I want to have a big epic run on it.
Oh, like you have with Wolverine, that big omnibus?
Yeah, I had two omnibuses come out in one day, which is pretty cool. There's a big X-Men and a Punisher one, which is really awesome. I've never had a two omnibus day before, so that was great.
That is right. I remember that day.
Yeah, we had this huge omnibus.
Like one box. I'm like, why don't we do buses?
And I don't get those, you know, for free. I don't get those comps of those for Marvel, like the big hardcover stuff you don't get. So I have to go buy them myself. So that was like, I spent like $250 on myself that day. It felt kind of shameful.
They look great on a bookshelf.
And then I thought, well, I should probably buy copies of these for my mom because my mom reads everything I do. But I was like, that's like $500. I'm going to spend $500 on myself today. I'm not worth that much.
And he had volume one, Mom.
Right. So I had to wait a few weeks to buy them for her.
Oh, my God, that's awesome. Well, the whole Wolverine, like, Wolverine, you brought him to hell, which was a fan. I love that whole story arc with him. Now they're going to kill him again. Like, do you have any insight of, like, what they're going to do with this? I mean, you basically killed him and then brought him back, and now they're doing it again. Like,
what I did is different than what they're doing now. I mean, my story was really more about pulling Wolverine's soul out of his body, because remember, his body was still running around
right
under the control of some demons. That all started as a Hellblazer story, as an idea for a Hellblazer story I was going to do before I became Marvel exclusive. So I never really killed Wolverine. He was still physically still running around. It's just his soul was trapped in hell. So I mean, what they're doing now is different. I kind of know where it's going. I mean, I get to go to the Marvel retreat, so you sit in the room and you hear all this stuff, which is cool to be in that room. It also kind of ruins all future Marvel stories for you because you always know how they're going to end. I'm not involved in, you know, any of the Death of Wolverine stuff. I stepped away from Amazing X-Men, which was kind of me saying goodbye to the X-Men world. And really the last issue of Wolverine and the X-Men for me was kind of me saying goodbye to Wolverine and kind of the story I'd been telling with Wolverine for years. And if I had been able to stick around a little bit longer on Amazing X-Men, which I had wanted to initially, then I would have been on it through all this Death of Wolverine stuff, which... I thought that would be a pretty good place for me to step away, since I kind of came into Marvel with Wolverine, like, well, now they're killing him, so that's a good time for me to leave the X-Men. But I didn't quite make it all the way there, so you won't see any Death of Wolverine stories for me, but Charles Soule's a good guy, and I like his stuff. and what I know of the story that he's going to tell sounds really cool. So I'm excited to read it.
Awesome, awesome. Me too. I'm excited to see what they're going to do with him and everything. But I do want to know, if I can, about the whole Original Sin, if I don't mind. But you said that you do this whole like retreat thing. So did you go into the Marvel offices pitching this story? Was like this your big idea and your big concept and everything?
For Original Sin?
Yes.
No, not really. Original Sin has kind of had a long history before it got to me. I think it started as an Alan Heinberg idea, and then at one point Ed Brubaker was the one who came up with the idea of things starting with the death of the Watcher. So when you go to these retreats, there, you know, we'll always talk about kind of what's the big news story. So, you know, we've got one coming up next month, and we'll be talking about what's our big news stuff for next year and beyond. So sometimes there are ideas that sort of come out of the ether, you know, when you've got all these people in the room, and you may be something like, well, we don't want to do this idea right now, but it'll kind of float around, and it'll probably come back around, and eventually somebody will grab it. So Original Sin was one of those ideas that kind of floated around for a few different retreats. I remember us talking about it quite a bit back when we were doing retreats for Fear Itself. So it's been around for a while. It was just sort of the kernel of an idea, and it's, you know, whenever there's that sort of kernel floating around, it's somebody has to at some point reach out and grab it and take ownership of it and figure it out. So it came up again at another retreat, you know, well, last year, a year before, I don't remember when, and kind of for the first time, as we started to talk about, you know, this is the idea of this is a murder mystery and things starting with the murder of the Watcher. That was the first time I really thought, you know what, I'd kind of like to write that. So I just raised my hand. at one point, Joe Quesada literally looked at the room and says, does anybody want to try to tackle this? And I said, yeah, I'll do that. And here I am. So, it's still, you know, the story is still mine, everything from there. It's kind of that kernel of the idea of the death of the Watcher and the secrets that spring out because of that. But I kind of had to figure out everything else, which is always cool. I've done a couple of stories like that at Marvel. You know, sometimes it's all you. Like, you walk in and say, I want to do this. And they say, okay. Sometimes it's, you know, an editor will come to you. Like, Axel Alonso came to me a few different times when I was doing Wolverine. One was when I did the Get Mystique storyline. And he just came to me and said, you know, all right, Wolverine chasing after Mystique for 4 issues. And I was like, okay. Or he came to me when I did Black Panther and said, Skrulls invading Wakanda for 3 issues. And I was like, got it. So it's cool sometimes when you get those, you know, an editor brings you something and you got to figure it out. And that's kind of what Original Sin was. But, I did, there was no outline from Alan or Ed. I have no idea what the story would have been like if those guys had written it. But I'm really happy with what I was able to put together. I really like that platform, that, you know, that kernel of an idea that was floating around. And I'm really happy with the story I've been able to tell from that. And people really seem to be digging it, which is cool. I have no idea what to expect. I've intentionally stayed off message boards. I didn't read reviews. I didn't want to read people speculating about who the killer was or who did this. So I kind of stayed away from all that. But all the stuff that's found its way to me has been really gratifying. People seem to have gotten into it. And it's a weird story. You know, once the issue 2, when the orb shows up, you kind of know, like, this is pretty crazy, right? But I think by the time it's done, like, if you looked at all the stuff I've written for Marvel and you thought, like, what would it be like if this guy wrote one of the Marvel events? Well, this is exactly what it would be like. It would be dark. It would have the Punisher in it. It would have Orb in it. It would have all the kind of stuff I've done in, well, you know, all my different books for Marvel over the course of, you know, 8-9 years now, however long I've been there.
You know, every time I read an issue of Original Sin, I'm just like, okay, I think I've got it. God damn it, Jason Aaron, it's another goddamn red herring. You got me.
Well, good. I mean, that's the, you know, I didn't want to do one of those kind of cheap mysteries where it's all just about yanking the rug out from under you. Mm-hmm. I mean, there, you know, it's still, even if you figure out who the killer is, you know, in issue one, like, it shouldn't matter. You should still be able to enjoy the story along the way. You know, it's not just about the plot. So spoilers, if you read some spoilers, it shouldn't really matter. You should still want to know, like, well, how does that play out? You know, it's not just about the answers to the mysteries.
Right. Well, you did, and spoilers for anybody who hasn't read issue four that dropped.
Yeah, shame on you.
Yeah. But in issue four, you did that big reveal about Nick Fury, and that was just brilliant. Like, what was your reason behind doing that with Nick and making him that, like, little old man?
Well, I can't really say anything without spoiling issue five. Like, you just have to.
Yeah, I tried.
I mean, this is a book the interviews I've done about Original Sin are pretty easy because most of the questions I just can't answer. I'd say, I can't tell you that.
I tried. But so, I thought it was really cool how you had him, like, all of a sudden the door opens up and, like, this little old man comes out. And all of a sudden, it all makes sense for me. You know, it just all synced that, wow, it's like all these life model decoys have been the young Nick Fury through all this time. It explains for me why his son is about almost the same age that we were led to believe. And it just worked, you know, seeing it happen.
Thanks, but you're still making some assumptions there that may not prove to be true.
I know. You'll have to go, just call me a message board.
Issue five will answer some questions while raising others, just like most of the issues so far. Issue five is called The Secret History of Nicholas J. Fury. So it kind of fills in some things we didn't know about Nick Fury. It fills in a part of his history that we've never seen before. It doesn't answer all the questions about, you know, why is he old now? Why is he with all these LMDs? Why is he living on this satellite? But it answers some of them.
Yeah, I love when you had Bucky cut off the head and just beat people with it. That was awesome.
Thanks. I've loved writing all the different characters together in Original Sin. You know, Punisher and Doctor Strange were fun, and then Bucky and Punisher and Rocket Raccoon and Punisher. I guess just variations of putting different characters with Punisher has been the most fun part.
Oh, no, because you put those, like, really weird teams together, but they all seem to work. It's like, you know, when you had Emma and you had Scott Lang and you have these, like, really weird little teams going on. Is this going to be a part of a bigger scheme, that the reason why you put them all together?
Yes. Yeah, I've said all along there's a reason. That it's not just a random assortment of characters. You know, and if you can see kind of at the end of issue four there, Black Panther has maybe started to figure something out, and he says, you know, that we are the secret. And exactly what he means by that, we'll see, I think, in issue six. You kind of get the answer to that. But yeah, there's a very specific reason why it's every one of those characters was chosen to be there.
Okay, so I got to know, since I was a huge fan of your run on Ghost Rider, what has been the hardest character for you to step away from? Whether it be, like, potential stories you had brewing that you didn't end up getting a chance to do, or just, you know, having just a real affinity for a character. What's been the hardest one that you've had to say, yeah, I had a big plan, but I have other things I need to do or I want to do, so this has to kind of pay a price?
That's a good question. I haven't had too much of that. I mean, things always change, you know, and just kind of the nature of the business that things get shuffled and you think, oh, I think I've got 24 issues on this book, and no, you've got 12, and no, you've got 8, and no, you've got 47, you know, things always
Well, like Ghost Rider, I know you had the main series and then you got the chance to come back and do that little mini series, that kind of final run, which was fantastic. So it was almost like you had a little bit more of a chance to kind of wrap things up than you did with just the regular series by itself.
Yeah. Well, with that, I mean, those issues that were published as a mini were pretty much going to be like the end of the ongoing book. It's just the numbers weren't great, so they canceled the book and published it as a mini to try to get a little boost. And I think that That changed a little bit, where I probably had like 8 issues to wrap things up, and then I had 5. So there's always stuff like that. I mean, I haven't had something big, I think, where I've had to walk away from it. I mean, like I said, I was going to do more Hellblazer at Vertigo, because I did 2 issues, and I was going to do some more stuff, but signed a Marvel exclusive, so I had to walk away from that. And I, in terms of like characters, it was hard to walk away from. It was actually a little bit hard when I left X-Men stuff, which I wrote Scout for 60 issues, and that was, you know, special to me because those were my characters. But when it was done, like it was done. I never really sat around thinking, like, wow, I'd really love to write Dash again. It was always like, well, Dash's story is done. So I just kind of moved on. But with the X-Men stuff, it was a little different in that, you know, I'd been writing X-Men for my entire career in comics. I won a Marvel Talent Search contest, you know, back in 2001 that was a Wolverine story. So all these things that led me into writing comics for a living were kind of Wolverine and X-Men stuff. And I'd been doing that the whole time. So when I wrapped up Wolverine the X-Men, and then I had to step away from Amazing X-Men, it was honestly like kind of weird for a couple of days, where I just realized like, oh, I'm not involved with like deciding the direction of Wolverine anymore, or these X-Men characters, and other people will continue to do that. Like, it's not just because I'm not writing Wolverine anymore, they're not going to stop publishing Wolverine. They're going to keep doing it.
You get to become an appreciator from that point on.
Right. So that is a little weird. It is a little bit like, you know, seeing your old girlfriend, like pictures of your old girlfriend with somebody else, or your boyfriend. And it's like, well, like, wow, they look great, but I don't really want to see this, you know? So that was like, for like 2 days I was like that, and then I was like over it. So, you know, I've enjoyed Latour's take on Wolverine and the X-Men. I'm excited about the Death of Wolverine stuff. So now I can go back to just being a fan of that stuff again.
Wait, did you choose Latour to like pick up Wolverine the X-Men after you leaving?
No, well, I mean, it's not like it was my decision that I get to choose those things. I mean, Nick Lowe and I had talked a lot about Latour, and Latour had already done some stuff for Nick. But no, I mean, that was all up to Nick Lowe. I mean, I think I told him, he probably asked me at one point, like, who I might like to see. And I think Latour and Dennis Hopeless were probably the two guys that I named, who are both friends of mine. But yeah, that was all up to him.
Because Latour is really, his Wolverine the X-Men still has your feel, which is great, you know, that it's not losing your momentum, which I'm really happy about.
Yeah, I mean, I like that it's, you know, he there's a lot of the Grant Morrison stuff in his, which there was a lot of that in mine. You know, there's kind of some of mine in his, but then there's a whole lot of just of Latour. So it does feel like it's not him trying to do the same thing I was doing. It's him very much, you know, taking the ball and running with it and kind of taking these characters to new places. So the stuff he's got coming up that I've heard about sounds super cool. Some of it kind of makes me jealous, to where I'm like, damn it, why didn't I think of that? That's a great idea. But yeah, I've enjoyed reading that book. And it was hard to let those kids go too. That was the other thing. I mean, even more than Wolverine, like, I really loved writing those kids at the school. So that was a book where I had long plans. I had plans stretching for a couple of years. And, you know, we did 40 something issues, but in the span of like 2 years. So we really churned out a lot of issues, which can kind of burn you out when you do that much in that short a time. So I initially had big plans for a lot of other stuff I wanted to do, but just the way things sort of, again, my schedule changed and some things popped up, I had to let that go. So it was hard to walk away from the kids. I could have written those kids for a few more years.
Right. Yeah, you did a great development with them. But we do have a question. What would you call Wolverine the X-Men after Wolverine's dead?
Well, there's already answers to that question. Trust me. Like, they've already figured all that out. So I don't want to spoil it. I mean, because
well, what would you call it? What would you call it?
Well, I don't want to say. I mean, I think what they're going to do is kind of the natural thing that you should do. So yeah, I'll just say that.
Okay. So tight lip. I know. But,
you know, I will say
they're not going to do the Deadpool and fill in random character that they did with Deadpool and Cable, because that would be, you know, fun.
Sure. You can put Deadpool anywhere, right?
Dr. Blue and the X-Men.
I will say that my original plan for Wolverine the X-Men was that I would do that book for a few years and then eventually spin out of that a kind of me doing my New Teen Titans book, because I'm a huge New Teen Titans fan, like the old Wolfman Perez New Teen Titans. That was kind of the first book that made me a comic book fan. It was the first book where I was like, oh, I want to read that every month. Initially the plan for Wolverine the X-Men is that I would have these kids in school and eventually, you know, Quentin Quire and some of them would leave to become, you know, my X-Men version of the New Teen Titans. So I'd do a teen superhero book. And that was going to be called New X-Men. But yeah, obviously that we never got to that.
Oh, wow. I know. You just shattered everything.
Well, there's nothing that says I can't come back some other time and still do that book. So, you know, somewhere down the line, who knows? I still love the New Teen Titans. If I can't write the actual Teen Titans at DC, then I'll come up with like the next best thing and do some Titans X-Men amalgam. Right. So who knows? That may still happen someday.
They live in a tower that's just an axe.
Right. That's not a bad idea.
Awesome.
Okay. I've always loved that about the Titans, that they lived in a giant T. It's a giant glass T.
In the middle of on an island right by Manhattan.
Right. You can always find where the Titans live.
That was awesome. So, you're working with Latour now with Southern Bastards, right?
Yep.
So, like, the whole Southern Bastards, that's been a really crazy book. That has been a crazy book. So, you did, when I was reading, when I read them, the two issues, and three drops this Wednesday, it felt a lot of like the way you were writing Scalped. It had that kind of a feel to it, that darkness to it. Like, did you kind of have that same kind of mentality when you were writing it, or?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the beginning of the ideas for Southern Bastard started as a Scalped story, or it was like a character from Scalped, and kind of grew into something else. But I think doing it with Latour changes it. Then, you know, if I done it with somebody else, I think it's kind of quirkier, because he's a quirkier guy. He's a funny guy. So I think he's always looking to sneak moments of humor into it. Just go through the three issues of Southern Bastards that will be out so far and count how many cartoon characters there are in the book. There's a surprising number of cartoon characters, whether it's a T-shirt or an ice cooler or a logo. He loves putting cartoon characters in there. To me, it has a different tone than Scalp. I think it's dark, sure, but hopefully not quite as dark. A little bit quirkier, a little bit funnier, I think, is what we're going for. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about Southern Bastards is that I don't want to say too much, but this first arc of the book is really kind of the pilot episode. So take it all together as the pilot episode. So it's really only once you read that entire arc do you really know what the book is about. By the time you get to the end of issue 4, you start to see, okay, this is where it's headed. Yeah.
You know, Eric and I, of course, work at a comic book store, and we have a customer, one of my favorites, who's from Alabama, and the first time he had picked up a comic book, I think it was one of yours, and, you know, you mentioned something about Alabama, he's like, what does he know about from Alabama? I'm just like, Jason Aaron's from the South. And one of his favorite parts was that line is like, wow, we haven't seen you in town. They're like, when has it been? 40 years since the day we put your daddy in the ground. I'm like, that's fantastic. He's like, this is my life. Jason Aaron's my mom.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, I mean, I, you know, the research I did for Southern Bastards was living in Alabama for 20 or almost 30 years of my life. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's about where I grew up. I grew up in a very rural, very country area on a, you know, a dead-end road that's now named after my grandfather, who was a Baptist preacher and a coal miner. So that's pretty country, you know. My great grandfather died of rabies, and his dad, my great great grandfather, stabbed the guy to death in an argument over some sheep.
Some sheep, yes.
So that's pretty country. So, yeah, all that's kind of injected into Southern Bastards.
I do want to say I noticed in one of the things I read about your Southern Baptist or former Southern Baptist thing. Being a former Southern Baptist myself, I do feel like your writing has that sense of an appreciation for religion that comes from having the faith at one point, but also that kind of realization that there's some bad stuff that goes with it. And what I love about Southern Bastards is I feel like it kind of perfectly encapsulates that sense of looking back at your church days, just going, wow. I made it out of there, but, you know, but yet also respecting some of the good that comes from that stuff. So.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm glad it reads like that. I grew up in Alabama, so pretty much anybody who grows up there, you grow up in the church. I grew up in the Baptist church. So it was only once I got to college that, you know, I started to look at some things, and I was like, well, I don't know if I believe that, and I don't know if I believe that part. And then ultimately I had an epiphany where I was like, I don't think I believe any of this, you know? So I've been an atheist for half my life, I guess, at this point, for 20-something years. The thing that I think is amusing is that nothing really changed for me. Like, I didn't change as a person. My values didn't change. I'm kind of the same guy I was before. It's just, I don't need that faith anymore. That faith just dissipated for me. I don't know. We can have a long discussion about atheism, but that's probably not what we're looking for, huh? I will say that. I'm glad I had that upbringing. I love that I have that knowledge of the Bible and knowledge of religion, that I grew up in the religion. I'm still fascinated by all religions. And I think you can see just through the work I've done in comics as a writer, clearly I'm interested in it because it comes up, you know, as a theme in a lot of stuff. And, you know, especially with the stuff I did with Wolverine, I think there was clearly a theme of fate. You know, going back to the very first Wolverine story I did all the way through to the end of Wolverine the X-Men, that was a big thread, is Wolverine finding fate. To the point where I remember reading at some point on a message board somebody criticizing me for forcing my Christian views upon people through my life, which I thought was awesome. It's not like I'm repulsed by the idea of religion. It's just for me personally, you know, it's not a thing.
Right. Wow. Wow. Because even in the whole in the Amazing X-Men, the Nightcrawler story arc, you had half the X-Men went to heaven proper, and half went to hell. You know, you didn't even, like, some people say it's at this dimension, that dimension. You're like, no, heaven.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, and you know, the I did this. Story when Nightcrawler died, about him and Wolverine, and kind of what was in Nightcrawler's will, and that was very much a story about fate, which, you know, that's a part of that character. So, I mean, to me, as a writer, you're never supposed to, like, somebody shouldn't read a story that you wrote and know exactly how you feel about this issue or that issue, or what side of the political spectrum you're on, or just hear your voice coming out of other characters. You know, it's not about that. It's about writing those characters and telling specific stories. So, you know, I like the fact that I don't think all my stuff reads the same. I, I don't think I've got one voice that you hear in every single story, or I hope not, because I certainly don't want to. I mean, I want everything to kind of be in service of that story or of those characters. And it doesn't matter if I'm an atheist or a Christian or whatever. Like, I should be able to write the characters as the characters.
Right. And you do a beautiful job. Everybody has their own personality, their own lives and everything, and you develop that beautifully. I do want to say something that I remember when I first worked at a comic shop. It was the first weekend I was working there, and you were the first guest. You were the first party I ever worked. And there was a moment toward the end of the night, everybody was pretty liquored up, like they are at a comic shop. And you were standing by me, and guys were making out with guys, and girls were making out with girls. And you turned to me, and you said, "Eric, for the gay guy, you are the straightest one here."
Did I say that?
You said that, and to this day, I've never forgotten that. That's where that comes from. Jason Aaron's the one who said it. I never, because it was just, you know how Mike was. Mike had everybody making out with everybody, and I was terrified, right. And you were standing by me.
Yes, yeah, when Mike and Aaron were together, it was always something. I've never done signings anywhere else quite like the ones I've done. Comic shop. It's always been a good time. I've been there three times, I think.
Yeah, I've been there three times.
I was convinced the first time they invited me down, it was only because the guys who owned the store were named Jason and Aaron. They invited me as a joke. But I've been back twice since, so I guess not. Yeah, and I love that shop. I contributed money to their Geek Easy expansion thing the other day, so I joined the Mug Club. So
yeah.
even though I make it down like once every 3 years, expect to see my mug hanging up for me when I get there.
Oh, that's awesome! Thank you so much for that. What I did wanted to say, okay, there's only one thing now. Would you ever go back? Can you go back to DC? Would you ever consider going back to DC? Because I would love, obviously, we'd like to write the Teen Titans. But, would you ever consider going back?
Sure. I mean, who knows? I would never say never. Like, comics is a really small industry. I always feel like you never want to burn a bridge with anybody,
Right.
I have no ill will towards DC or no bad feelings about my the stuff I did there. I only did one book really for the DCU. I did one Joker's Asylum one shot, a Penguin story. It was the only DCU thing I ever did. So most of my stuff was at Vertigo, and I had a tremendous time at Vertigo. I wouldn't be in comics at all if it wasn't for Will Dennis and Karen Berger at Vertigo. And for me, really, I like as a fan, as a kid, I grew up as a DC kid, so it was all that DC stuff in the 80s that made me a comic book fan. New Teen Titans, Alan Moore Swamp Thing, books like Atari Force, if you remember Atari Force.
Oh, God, yeah.
Blue Devil, I loved Blue Devil. Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen. I was a big fan of all that stuff, really. I think before, I became a big fan of the X-Men or anything Marvel. So it all kind of started for me with DC. So someday, who knows? I mean, I'm very happy at Marvel. I just, re-upped on my exclusive for the third time.
Wow.
Like a year ago. So I'll be, at Marvel exclusive for another 2 years at least, and at that point, who knows, maybe I'll want to re-sign with Marvel or maybe not. I don't know. I'm very happy with the people I work with. I have a lot of faith in Axel Alonso as editor-in-chief, and I love working under Tom Brevoort, so I have no complaints where I'm at right now, but who knows, you never know where things will take you.
Right. Yeah, I would love to see some more of DC, because I remember reading that Penguin, and I loved that one shot. That you put a heart and soul to the Penguin, which was, mind-blowing to me.
Thanks. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I got to write Batman for one panel.
So how was that?
It was great. He had one line, I think.
That's awesome. Well, I think we're going to wrap this up. Jason, thank you so much for partaking and letting us interview you. I really appreciate it. And it's awesome, and I guess I'll see you in 3 years? About two years?
Yeah, maybe not three. I was just there when I was there last year, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I'll have to try to make it back soon.
Well, once we have all the mugs and everything, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't want to see anybody drinking out of my mug.
You know Aaron will.
Yeah. Hopefully drink out of it is the only thing he does.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason, again. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Don't forget, you can give us a call and leave us a voicemail, ask us a question, or just tell us how much you love the show. Call that number, 951-468-8-ASK. That's 951-468-8-ASK. Give us a call and let us know what you think.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of tops and bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.